Good evening. 6:01 the time. You're tuned to WDIY Allentown. 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. My name is Ken Michael. This is Lehigh Valley Art Salon. In conjunction with Black History Month, Downtown Art Museum presents Interventions in Printmaking Through Generations of African-American Women. This exhibition includes artists from throughout the United States and African diaspora who have brokered new technologies and approaches to printmaking while addressing issues pertaining to history, identity, and politics. In works ranging from the representational to the abstract, this diverse group of women has enriched the print medium. Their brilliantly drafted lithographs, colorful etchings, silk screens, and conceptually rich photographs. Nearly 20 artists from the civil rights era to the present day are included in this show. Artists such including Emma Amos, Mary Lee Bendolf, Chikaya Booker, Robin Holder, Margot Humphrey, Toyin Adutola, Faith Ringgold, Betty Saar, Allison Saar, and several others. The exhibition is co-curated by Museum Art Museum President and CEO David Mickenberg and Dr. Daniel Haxel, Associate Professor of Art History at Kutztown University of Pennsylvania, former fellow at the Smithsonian American Art Museum and Institute for the Arts and Humanities. Dr. Haxel received his PhD from Penn State University and has published on diverse topics, including abstract expressionism, collage, installation art, the African diaspora, and intersections of arts and sports. He's also previously taught at the University of Buffalo, Penn State University, and has lectured at the Smithsonian American Art Museum, Harvard University, New York University, National Gallery of Art, Philadelphia Museum of Art, and College Art Association, among others. How did you get involved in this project with the Allentown Art Museum? First off, a little bit about your art history, how you came to this event.
Part of this came from the new director of the Allentown Art Museum, David Mickenberg, who has been pretty active in reaching out to local colleges and universities to try to make the museum more central as a cultural hub in the Lehigh Valley and surrounding area. So he's become a frequent figure at events at Kutztown University, where I teach. We've gotten to know each other and had conversations about the type of work that I've done professionally, the type of courses that I teach. And one thing that interested him was the fact that I teach courses on African-American art as well as contemporary African art. We talked about different ways where we might collaborate, and David Mickenberg is very interested in printmaking. He's organized some exhibitions about prints at various museums where he's worked. We started talking about putting together something for Black History Month that focused on the printmaking mediums in particular, and it sort of grew out of a conversation just about the Allentown Art Museum's collection. They have a very famous print by Elizabeth Catlett called The Sharecropper, and it's a very popular print that appears in many textbooks. So it seemed like a great starting point was the museum's collection to base an exhibition upon. This project has enabled the museum to grow their collection. Several of the works have recently been acquired by the museum, and it was also a way to reach out to print studios and workshops in Philadelphia and other regions and borrow some works from them. So it's an effort to do something for Black History Month, showcase the museum's collection, and hopefully put together a show that demonstrates the diversity of this medium and how African-American women have approached it.
And from what they're describing, interventions in printmaking, three generations, it's assembled into roughly three different groups of women?
Yes. I mean, one of the problems in putting together a show based upon medium is how to organize it and how to structure it. We began with a series of conversations about what artists we'd like to see included, who are very prominent printmakers, or who are artists that might be known as painters and sculptors but have worked in printmaking. So as we began compiling lists of the types of artists we wanted to include in the show, it became pretty clear that we had three maybe distinct generations of printmakers going back to that Elizabeth Catlett touchstone. And she represents the first generation, artists who were very active in the height of the civil rights era. So we began there with artists like Faith Ringgold, who would protest the exclusionary practices of New York City museums, to people like Betty Saar, who would create artwork that questioned the way in which race was stereotyped in advertising and popular culture, to people like Catlett, who would try to make prints that were about average working class people. We began with a group of artists that were trying to engage civil rights. Some of them, like Emma Amos, was a part of a very influential art movement or art group known as Spiral.
And she was the only woman artist in this group?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, one of the histories of art that maybe doesn't get mentioned is some sexism. And within the art world, there certainly has been an exclusion of women. So Amos found herself the only woman in this group of very prominent African-American artists that included Romare Bearden, Hale Woodruff, and Norman Lewis, and others. They gathered in Bearden Studio in New York City right in the early 1960s and asked themselves the question, what should black art be? What should artists of color do during the civil rights movement that was significant and meaningful? And they talked about things like marching on Washington and joining Martin Luther King, but they ultimately decided to make several exhibitions that centered upon issues pertaining to race. So she was the youngest member of the group, but also the only woman in that regard.
I would think with the African-American women artists, they have several issues that they're addressing. When you talk about the African-American artists that first and foremost, they're addressing racism, they're addressing segregation, discrimination, but they had a twin cross to bear there.
Absolutely. There's a famous essay by a woman named Adrienne Piper, and she's an artist and a scholar, and she pointed out that there are these competing issues that many African-American women face. They have to do with racism, but also discrimination based upon gender. And in fact, one of the terms that we use in the exhibition or reference is called Afrofemcentrism, which reflects a spirit of making women's issues as well as African-American issues central to the creation of artwork. And that is something that many of these artists of this first generation were labeled as artists, were Afrofemcentric artists, which is a bit of a mouthful, but I think it shows how many artists were pulling on diverse experiences for their work. It could be something pertaining to their lives and experiences as women. It might relate to the art world. It might relate to broader civil rights issues. But these were foremost to this generation and works on their minds.
These women artists were primarily addressing discrimination of a racist nature, but also the women artist nature. And it's interesting that the women's liberation movement came sort of on the heels of the civil rights movement in the late 60s, and so it would be natural for them to be able to move in and address these new issues right away. It was already in their wheelhouse.
In some instances, the two went hand in hand, and we see communities rally upon broader civil rights issues that have to do with race and gender. But some of these women did feel like the art world could be very sexist as well as racist. So as you mentioned, they had that dual element to compete against as they're trying to become professional, critically acclaimed or accepted artists in that regard. And many of them speak openly about this, that they had a lot of discrimination to face by virtue of expectations about women, how they perform, what kinds of lives they lead. Even in one of the more recent generations of artists in the show, Deborah Willis, her artwork references a moment from art school when a professor told her she would never amount to anything because she's a woman and motherhood would ruin her career. So the print that we've included in the show features Deborah Willis pregnant, and there are images of her pregnant. It's titled, "I've Saved a Spot for a Good Man." And what this references is the fact that she was occupying a space in art school that was one that could have gone to a male, and her art teachers were frustrated by that. They were concerned that she wasn't going to follow through on her art career because motherhood would prevent that. But in fact, she ended up becoming an incredibly prominent scholar and artist. She was currently chair of the Department of Photography at New York University. She also happened to give birth to Hank Willis Thomas, a very prominent African-American artist in his own right. So this print is a very interesting take on this discrimination, showing that she was both a major artist and scholar herself, but also that through motherhood that she was criticized for, she also contributes another artist in her family lineage in this way.
I guess that primarily with the nature of printmaking, it's often used as broadsides, used as addressing social issues. It's always been in its DNA that printmaking is often about what's going on contemporary in that moment, in that place, and addressing the social ills in that way. But I noticed that some of them were abstractions as well. The one that I was particularly delighted with was that somebody that incorporated the idea of the Gies Bend quilters into printmaking. And for people that don't know about Gies Bend and the amazing quilts, give them a little bit of a...
Absolutely. I mean, one thing we wanted to accomplish with this show was to demonstrate that the art of African-American women is remarkably diverse. I think sometimes there's a tendency to narrow the way in which we view art sometimes and to consider really the identity of the artist as always bound within a kind of social context. So we've obviously talked a little bit about race, we've talked a little bit about gender, but many of these women are thinking about broader things such as abstraction, as you mentioned. And in the case of quilt making, there's a very conscious effort on behalf of many women to work in traditions that sometimes don't get a place in high art, as it's discussed. And they were trying to continue legacies of craft, things such as quilt making. And we have great examples of these really interesting prints where, through a transfer process, basically a mock-up of a quilt gets transferred to an etching plate. And so you're able to produce a print that has that same joined ethos and the same abstract shapes and panels of a quilt, but it's obviously done through a print process, which is pretty remarkable.
I was just thinking about that actually the idea of addressing the nature of quilt making is still going into those feminist issues, still talking about women's work and how women's work can now be elevated to high art, making these wonderful etchings representing what was essentially initially a utilitarian craft, making quilts. It was not about winning the award, it was about making quilts. And this amazing group of people in East Bend made these remarkable works of art that were then elevated by the printmaking of it, or further elevated by the printmaking of it. I think they're works of art to begin with. But
they are. And the interesting story about East Bend is that it was a very secluded community of women who were making these quilts to serve a utilitarian function, to stay warm. But they're incredibly colorful, they're patterned, they have a level of engagement with formal issues that a lot of times aren't acknowledged in craft traditions. And so in the early 2000s, there were a series of exhibitions of their quilts when critics went, wow, you know, these are amazing. If we consider these as paintings, for example, they would rival much of the work that was produced during the heyday of abstract expressionism. So audiences only recently have come to really appreciate the aesthetics and the types of compositions that these women are making. And the success and notoriety that these women gained led them to be invited to work with places like Paulson Press in Berkeley, California. And they would produce these prints based upon the same logic and language of the quilts. But obviously, they are no longer functional. They're there as aesthetic objects that we can appreciate and really celebrate in a lot of ways.
In your notes, in the 60s and 70s, it continued to mine personal experiences, personal revelations, but were also then beginning to go into abstraction, or they were in two camps. That things were very personal for them, mm-hmm. but they were also addressing things as an abstraction, as a work above the individual and the personal, but at the same time leaving one foot in the this is personal camp.
That's right. There was a debate about what kind of content should go into art in general, especially for artists who were of a minority group. You know, some artists very consciously tried to share their experiences, as we mentioned. The artists who were labeled Afrofem-centrist were really trying to make their experiences and realities part of the fabric of their art and share those realities with their audiences. But there are other artists who felt like race is very limiting. And one thread that links several artists over different generations is this big question, you know, what is the subject of this work? Sometimes it might not be related to racism or sexism. Sometimes the work might be about formal issues, issues of abstraction. And so there was a very big debate that emerged among African-American communities in the arts, which was, how do we address color? Is color something that's aesthetic, or is it something that represents a critical viewpoint indebted to race? So some of the artists that are included in this exhibition challenge those ideas. There's a certain expectation that black art should look a particular way or should have a certain subject. Many artists find this to be confining and limiting in the type of work they produce. So you'll see artists like Shekiah Booker, who has a studio in Allentown and has maintained a local tie to the Lehigh Valley. You'll see other artists like Mary Lovelace O'Neill, who make artworks, again, that are dealing with issues of abstraction, that are engaging in the dialogue of abstract expressionism and minimalism, and they're making these really interesting prints that force us to perhaps reconsider associations that we have with color formally as well as critically in that regard.
Glad you brought up Shekiah Booker. I didn't know she was a printmaker. I've only known her by those fascinating sculptures that I have seen a few times here and there around the valley. One time in Easton with one of the Lafayette Colleges had an exhibition of her work about a year ago or so.
Yeah, one way we use the term interventions in this exhibition is to refer to these interventions where artists who might be associated with another medium, like Booker and sculpture, but to look at what happens when they experiment within printmaking. Some of these artists are absolutely dedicated printmakers. They've studied and worked at very prestigious workshops throughout the world, but others might be known primarily as painters or sculptors. And we have these great examples of what happens when someone enters into a collaboration with master printers, people at the Robert Blackburn Workshop or Durham Press outside of Philadelphia. So there are these great moments where we have an artist who might not be entirely conversant in a medium enter the print studio, but the exchange of ideas produces something very rich. So in the case of Booker, she's known for these great sculptures made of tires and other found objects that she manipulates. Well, in the print studio, she takes different elements of woodblock, she takes different papers and reconstitutes them in ways that produce these really compelling dynamic abstractions.
You're tuned to WDIY Allentown 88.1 FM. And WDIY.org. My name is Ken Michael. It's Lehigh Valley Art Salon tonight, discussing the exhibition Interventions in Printmaking, Three Generations of African-American Women. It'll be in the William Butts Gallery January 25th through April 12th. My guest, Dr. Daniel Haxel, is the co-curator. He is an associate professor of art history at Kutztown University.
WDIY is proud to sponsor Godfrey Daniels presenting the Dina Hall Trio on Saturday, January 24th at 8 p.m. Featuring singer-songwriter Dina Hall, Andy Kilcoyne on acoustic lead guitar, and Nick Franklick on bass, Alex Raddis opens the show. For more information, GodfreyDaniels.org or 610-867-2390.
So a lot of what this exhibition is about is experimentation, or the artists learning to experiment, looking at their worlds, and perhaps with the beginning of the breath of freedom of having an art show or not just being confined to being a woman or being an African-American, that they're now expanding out and making all sorts of explorations.
And some of the examples in the show, we have artists who were invited to work with a print studio because they received recognition for, as I mentioned, paintings or collages or photography. And we see a great spirit of experimentation, which is another way I think this medium becomes enriched when we look at these artists. We might often think of printmaking as a very specific, narrow medium in terms of etching or screen printing. We probably have different associations with what this medium consists of, but these artists really challenge it. They push it. They're examples of collaged works, photographic transfers, as we mentioned, transferring even quilt materials. So these are prints that are textured, they're reconstituted, they're lithographs. There's just a great diversity in the ways in which they approach printmaking mediums. And I think the exhibition does a really nice job of showing the flexibility of printmaking.
A couple of these artists are known for combining photography with the printmaking processes. Mae Weems, Deborah Willis.
Carrie Mae Weems is one who...
Carrie Mae Weems.
No, it's okay. The museum is very excited to have recently acquired works from. I think it was 2 years ago she was awarded a MacArthur Foundation Genius Grant in recognition of an incredibly accomplished career, but also to foster future works from the artist. So in the case of Weems, there are these two terrific examples of her work where she will appropriate photographic images and then join them with text that produces very conceptual, thought-provoking works. One of them uses a famous photograph from the 19th century by a French photographer named Gustave Legray, and she uses this photograph, which was created by combining negatives. She uses this photograph with text about a political candidate to ask about the nature of politics and representation and how we might have a political figure look one way publicly, but then maybe behave or perform differently when they are elected or put into office.
Probably a two-sided face that many of them have been used to growing up through the art world, as both as African-American and as women, that this would be something they would be more than happy to address. And it sounds like it began to come about around the same time that there were other artists like Lynn Holzer that were taking text and appropriating images that we knew this image as being one thing, but when you combine it with some provocative text, give it an entrance into a current contemporary theme that artists or the audience would know about.
Yeah, I think in the examples of Carrie Mae Weems and Deborah Willis, they are very much coming of age and working professionally at this time that you're talking about, when artists like Holzer and others are using text to question everything from social norms to gender to race. One thing that you're able to see throughout the exhibition are these subtle shifts in how the art world is operating, where these women are educated, what types of schools they study at, what kinds of programs they go through. There are a great range of critical approaches that the artists use to engage us as viewers.
I guess this would be the third generation of interventions. It's rather provocative, the post-Black generation?
Correct. Post-Black has been a very provocative term that was applied to today's generation of artists by Thelma Golden, a very prominent curator at the Studio Museum in Harlem. She put together an exhibition where she used this term extensively to refer to artists born well after the Civil Rights era, where race might not have the same type of associations that it would have for a Faith Ringgold or a Betty Saar. Many of these artists are much younger. They have a different body of experiences than those who were out there trying to get things like voting rights. So there's a different kind of relationship to race. And the idea of post-Black is that maybe we've moved beyond race being the qualifying criterion for a Black artist, and that there are other things that we can consider. These artists are very flexible in terms of how they work. Some of them have unbelievably high levels of technical skills and proficiency. I think one thing that might impress audiences is just the sheer gifts and draftsmanship that many of these women have. Some of them really produce, just from a technical standpoint, really inventive, complex works. But they use this sometimes to really question the whole apparatus of race. And so we'll see some artists like Toya Nodutola make these lithographs where color for her is simply the shade of her crayon that she uses to make artworks, or the Sharpie marker that she was known for making drawings of. That color wasn't necessarily a statement about race, but it was something that was linked to just the literalness of her materials. And again, this work might ask us as viewers to reconsider the ways in which we view things like a portrait or a representation of someone that might have dark skin color, for example. But many of these other post-Black artists were very provocative. Kara Walker features in the exhibition, and she is someone who has had great amount of critical acclaim, but she's also been sharply criticized for work that delves into maybe some of the darkest aspects of historical imaginations that we might have. She shows works that have great amounts of violence or sexual situations. They're works that sometimes can be really challenging to look at, yet conversely, they're very beautifully drafted. They're really remarkable as artworks. So we're thrust into the situation where we're looking at something that could be offensive, but really enticing at the same time. And so many of these post-Black artists share this type of dichotomy in their work, where it's something very beguiling, but also something very off-putting. And others like Wangechi Mutu, I think, demonstrate this aspect where we look at something beautiful yet grotesque simultaneously.
I always like that about art that's executed perfectly so that your aesthetic mind wants to go, oh, but at the same time, it's a horrific image, or it's an image that's grotesque. And so you have that dissonance in your that's going on that's very effective. Yeah, I was curious. I was reading this of the Carl Walker, known for images of the antebellum South and the silhouette traditions, but I'm guessing they're bad silhouette traditions, that is towing that line or going both ways with that, where beautifully executed, terrible situation, that you have that tug of war going on as the viewer.
I think tug of war is a nice way to frame it, because she purposefully selects traditions that might have an association with a genteel lifestyle or a decorative arts tradition that's very comforting. Silhouettes, for example, or even the drawing tradition is something that she has remarkable facility with. But in these prints, we see images that cut both ways. One of them is called Dread, and it's an object that looks like it could be a dreadlock, but it also could be a whip. And we're left dealing with some ambiguity in Kara Walker's work, where we see something that could represent one thing or another based upon the kinds of references and associations she makes. She does a great deal of research into the legacy of images and stereotypes. So the antebellum South is a big source of inspiration for her. Everything from Gone with the Wind to various stereotypes. She's really not shy about addressing these histories and then presents them in ways that are very aesthetically appealing, that, as you mentioned, creates that tug of war that we feel, where we want to look and appreciate the skill and craftsmanship, but then we also don't necessarily want to be confronted with such atrocities or such difficult work.
I've been speaking with Dr. Daniel Haxel, Associate Professor of Art History at Kutztown University and co-curator Interventions in Printmaking, Three Generations of African-American Women. It will be on view in the Allentown Art Museum from January 25th through April 12th of this year.